Welcome back to our latest podcast here at publicsectorinc.org. My name is Michael Allegretti. I'm the director of the Center for State and Local Leadership, and I'm joined by Josh Barrow, the Walter B. Wriston Fellow here at the Manhattan Institute. How are you, Josh?
Doing really well, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing well and happy to have read your latest report, Cadillac Coverage, The High Cost of Employee Health Benefits, Public Employee Health Benefits. And needless to say, Josh, the timing of this report is, well, it's spot on with the debt debates going on in Washington, where it appears we're going to have a resolution, but we're reminded of just how important it is to get debts under control in this country at the state and local level, not just nationally. And with today's bankruptcy of Central Falls, Rhode Island, the messages in this paper are so critical. So why did you write it? Why now?
Sure. Well, I mean, when you look at all levels of government, the exploding healthcare costs are a huge driver of the budget problems that we're seeing. At the federal level, while entitlements are a big problem, the most problematic entitlement is Medicare. At the state and local level, we're seeing cost pressures in Medicaid and other public healthcare expenditures. And then in what people don't always focus on is a significant area of public expenditure on health, but it really is public employee health benefits. The cost for public employee health care is roughly 5% of all state and local budgets in the country. So it's really a significant cost area, and there are significant opportunities for governments to save money in this area, which I discuss in the report.
Now, in the report, you right off the bat explain how the cost of public sector health care is so much higher than private sector health care. Why is that?
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, the gaps really are quite stark. So when you look at the value of the benefit that public employees receive in the form of a health insurance plan, the average value of that benefit for an employee who's just taking coverage for themselves is a little bit over $5,000, and it's $1,300 more than what's typical for an employee getting single coverage at a private sector job. The employee is getting coverage for his whole family. The benefit he's getting or that she is getting on average is worth about $11,600. That exceeds the typical benefit in the private sector by more than $2,000. So these benefits are both quite large. I mean, we're talking thousands of dollars a year per employee. And there's a significant cost gap with what you typically see in the private sector. So it's a significant area for savings that can be achieved.
Now, you go on to say that while the public sector could essentially emulate what's going on in the private sector, that's still not the whole story. Costs are going to continue to rise.
Right.
Why is that, and what can be done to deal with that?
Well, so in terms of emulation, one of the things that we're seeing people talk about in a lot of states is, well, we should make public employees pay as large a percentage of their health premiums as is typical in the private sector. Typically, public employees are paying about 15% of their health premiums, a little less than that if it's single coverage, a little more for family coverage. In the private sector, that number's closer to 25%. So indeed, that is a significant gap, and you can save quite a bit of money by aligning those employee contributions for healthcare to what you see in the private sector. And that, for example, was one of the key points in the big acrimonious fight in Wisconsin this year, was actually some fairly modest changes in employee contributions toward health premiums, where employees would still be paying on average less than is typical in the private sector. Those are generally good reforms. The problem with that narrow scope is that it's not just that public employees pay for a smaller percentage of their health insurance than is typical in the private sector. They also have more generous plans overall. They get plans that tend to have lower deductibles, if they even have a deductible at all, and in many cases, much more often than in the private sector, they get plans with no deductible. They tend to have lower co-payments when they go to see a doctor or receive other medical services. And there are other differences, like typically when you take a job, there's a waiting period before you can receive health benefits. In the public sector, both it is more frequently the case that there is no waiting period, and when there is a waiting period, it tends to be shorter on average. So all those different kinds of plan features add up to make these public sector plans more expensive on average. So even if you had employees paying a typical percentage, because the plan is more expensive overall, you still have a cost disadvantage compared to the private sector.
One has to wonder if the general public knew all of the nuances of what kind of goes into the mix of these costs, whether you would have seen the same type of fury that we saw in places like Wisconsin, because when you read the facts, it becomes so much clearer why the cost is higher and the seeming inequity between the public and private sector. While we're in the Midwest, let's go a few states over to Indiana. I was just with Governor Mitch Daniels earlier this week. He was speaking in glowing terms about what folks in his government had done to kind of really changed the social contract between government and its employees in relation to health benefits. You talk about that in the report. What did they do, and what's good about it?
Sure. So in the report, I sort of talk about two options that you can follow to try to normalize your healthcare costs or get a grip on them. And one is to just sort of try to emulate what's done in the private sector, which is tweak the plans you have, raise the co-payments, raise the deductibles. You're still looking at totally acceptable levels of health coverage. It's just what you typically see in private sector jobs that come with health insurance. But Indiana's gone a step farther, and they've taken steps that not only reduce the generosity of health benefits, but are actually designed to change the way that consumers, that public employees as consumers of healthcare, think about the healthcare they're getting so that costs can be reduced overall and there can be savings that accrue to both the employees and the employer. So what Indiana has made heavy use of are what are called consumer-directed health plans. And the way these work, you get a high-deductible health plan that only covers basically catastrophic expenses over a deductible of several thousand dollars a year. You also receive from the employer, which is the state of Indiana in this case, a contribution into a health savings account. And you can withdraw money out of that account to pay for routine health care expenses. Whatever you don't spend during the year, you can roll over for costs in later years, and eventually you can withdraw it in retirement for non-healthcare expenses. So these plans have a couple of effects, but a key one of is that it means that for most routine healthcare, the employee is paying at the margin for the care they're receiving. So they have the incentive to say, is this procedure that's being recommended to me really useful for my health? And am I getting it from a cost-effective provider? Or should I think about, you know, seeing a different doctor? Obviously, you can't do this while you're on the operating table, but if you need an MRI, you often have the opportunity to chop around to four or five different MRI providers and say, you know, where can I get the best value? And when Indiana brought in Mercer Consulting, which is a leading consultancy on employee benefits issues, what they found was that there was about a 10% savings on healthcare costs attributable to what they're calling consumerism, which is basically consumers actually really thinking about what their healthcare costs at the time they're consuming it and being more frugal in their consumption. There was further savings, about an additional 5%, that accrued not to the state but to the employees. Because of their lower usage, they're paying less out of pocket. So the total savings there were on the order between $20 and $30 million, which doesn't sound like a ton of money, but you have to keep in mind that the state of Indiana doesn't have a ton of employees. Most employment's at the local level. If you expanded this out to all state and local employees in the entire country and achieved similar savings, the savings would be on the order of $20 billion a year, or just a little bit less than 1% of all state and local government spending. So there's a lot of money to be had on the table here by moving to a more consumer-directed approach to public employee health care.
And Josh, you know, we shop around for everything in life, and yet it seems that healthcare is this one thing where that's not taking place, and that's probably not a good thing. And so anything that can start to attach a real price to services is probably a step in the right direction, and that's why I'm happy you highlighted that in your paper. One last question, moving from the policy to the politics. It sounds great on paper. It seems to be working in Indiana. $20 billion potentially, or give or take, nationally is a lot of money, despite what some in Washington might claim. What's the obstacle to this happening across the country?
Well, it's a big change from the way that most people are used to receiving their health benefits. The problems of excessive costs in healthcare are not limited to public employee health plans, obviously. You see it throughout the economy, and you see it in both public and private sectors, where more traditional managed care plans are still hold the large majority of the market share. So it's something that's new for most people, and I think that they find it a little unusual and people resist change. Also, public employee unions have generally been very, very forceful about trying to retain the health benefit structures that they have now. The report, I mean, we put Cadillac plans in the title, and there was one of the key debates as the healthcare law was being enacted last year was about the Cadillac tax, which is a tax that will come into effect in a few years on high price health plans of the sort that we're talking about in the public sector here. There was a provision like that included in the law, but AFSCME, the largest union for state and local employees in the country, was a strong opponent to that provision. So they've invested a lot of political energy in fighting to protect the health plans they have, both at the federal level and at the state and local level. So they've tended to resist changes like this. But the problem is that while it's nice to have a very fancy health plan that covers everything, the costs have just been exploding in a completely amazing way. And you can see that in chart one in the report. The average cost of a public employee health plan was about $2,000 in 1996, and It's now moved to north of $5,000 as of 2009. So what was sustainable 20 years ago is just not something you can do anymore. So while you see a lot of resistance to it, I think it's good that Governor Mitch Daniels was able to move past that, and I'm hopeful that in other states and cities we'll see people emulating that Indiana approach.
And as I said, Josh, your timing is impeccable. With bankruptcy today in Central Falls, Rhode Island, we're reminded of the fact that sustainability of these plans is as important as the level of coverage to a certain degree. The report is Cadillac Coverage, The High Cost of Public Employee Health Benefits. Visit www.publicsectorinc.org to read this report, as well as many others by Josh and other contributors, and join our national conversation daily. Josh, thanks for being on.
Absolutely. Thanks, Michael.
Take care.